Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Y una vez vista esta imagen, tomará la decisión el árbitro del partido. ¿Cómo ha empezado la liga? ¿Pero esto qué es? ¿Pero esto qué es, Javi?
A los 30 segundos. Desde luego, cuando para la imagen, la imagen...
Mira, mira, espera.
Peligroso.
Ya lo ha visto Jaime Manzano. Dibuja el monitor. Se lleva la mano al bolsillo. Roja directa. Cristina ve a Hugo Guillamón.
So that was Hugo Guillamón sent off after only 31 seconds of the first game of the La Liga season. It didn't take long for the drama to come, and La Liga Lowdown is here for another season to fill you in on everything that happens, starting off with match day one. I'm Sam Leveridge, and I'm joined today by Rory Barley. How are you, Rory?
I'm absolutely fantastic. It's been a rip-roaring start to La Liga season, and yeah, I can't say I've done anything but really, really enjoy the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it's had it all, hasn't it? Red cards, lots of goals, late kickoffs. I mean, if there was one thing you wanted to do this weekend, then it wasn't sleep, because there was so much La Liga action.
Yeah, certainly an adrenaline buzz. Just there was quite a lot of drama for the first week, and it feels like sometimes the start of a season can be a bit like a pre-season. It can maybe be a bit more low-key than we're used to, but this time round, Friday night, it really kicked off, as we'll get into, and yeah, from then on it continued to be pretty dramatic.
Yeah, well, Friday night, of course, everybody was waiting for that big game to start off the season, and everybody knew that Jose Bordalas up against his former side, it was going to be a heated game, but nobody was quite expecting Guillamón to get sent off for some raised studs in the first 31st second. So that kind of set the tone, but before that, maybe you could be forgiven for expecting a bit more of a sombre tone, because this was the first La Liga match day without Lionel Messi since October 2004, 829 match days ago. Rory, just how depressing was it to head into a La Liga season without Lionel Messi?
How do you really sum it up? I mean, for myself and for many others, it's pretty much a lifetime that Leo Messi has been around. I would have been 8-9 years old when Leo Messi made his debut, and so I've grown up with him being there. It's a part of your life, him seeing him every weekend and twice a week, watching him sit defenders down and embarrass them and then whip it into the bottom corner, and that's a joy that you can't really replace, because there simply is no one like Leo Messi, and the things that he did on the pitch just can't be replicated by anyone else. And even if you're not a Barcelona fan or you're not a keen follower of Barcelona, you can't escape the feeling or the sentiment that this was a historic period in Spanish football history and a historic period within football history. And to watch Leo Messi week in, week out was an absolute pleasure, an absolute privilege. And you can't help but be a little melancholy that it's over.
Yeah, so we're going to look at the Barcelona game now. They faced Real Sociedad, a 4-2 win, which looked like it was going to be much more routine than it was in the end. And of course, the first goal came from Gerard Pique, the man of the moment, after he reduced his wages to get Memphis Depay, Eric García and Raymanage registered with La Liga. So we're going to pass over to Rory now, who was chatting to Domagoj Kostanyasak. But first of all, a little bit of commentary from Spain of just the adoration that there was for Gerard Pique as he opened the scoring.
Ahora la falta está a unos 20 metros de la línea frontal del área grande, hacia la derecha, según ataca el Barça. 5 al remate, sube Piqué, la pone Memphis, Piqué, gol del presidente. Gol, 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 gol del Barça. Gol del presidente, gol del central. Gol del que se besa el escudo. Gol del que se baja el sueldo para que se inscriban los otros dos. Marca Gerard Piqué, que no estaba acabado, aunque muchos le querían enterrar.
I'm here with Domagoj Kostanchak. I've tried to say his name. It is DK for the rest of the sort of interview we're doing here, just so that I don't mess it up too much. He is a man of many parishes, including Total Football Analysis and Johan's Rondos, a new podcast about all things Spanish football in Barcelona. And that is something that he's an excellent expert on. But thank you very much for coming on, DK.
No worries, mate. I'm glad to be here. And don't worry about the name. I'm kind of used to that already by this point. You know, even Croatian people struggle with it. So I'm like, it's fine, people. Just call me DK. That's fine.
Sounds good. I'll roll with that from now on. We've both just watched Barcelona in their first game of the season, their first game of the post-Messi era, beat Real Sociedad 4-2. And I can't start anywhere else. It is the story. What was it like watching Barcelona without Leo Messi for the first time in many, many years? What did it feel like and what did it look like for you?
Oh, that's a really tough question. I mean, it was always going to be much different without Messi, obviously. And we've heard the fans chant his name a couple of times throughout the game, if I'm not mistaken. And to be honest, it felt so much different. But at the same time, this is something that we were kind of bracing ourselves for the last couple of years, especially with the rumors kind of picking up for the last couple of years. It was inevitable, you know. It had to happen. The transition had to happen. The only downside is, I mean, obviously, losing Messi was always going to be huge. But for me, it's the way that he left. That was the only bad thing about it, because overall, I think this is what this team needs. It might be harsh. It might be difficult at first, but I think that this team just had to try to play football without Messi, and now they'll be forced to do so, which is kind of you know, difficult. But that's how you want to swim as well. You just throw yourself into the sea and hope for the best. So let's see how they do.
Yeah, definitely. I think as much as it's sad to see them without him, and it is definitely weird, it's interesting. And the thing that struck me was that this game was not the melancholy procession that perhaps you could have expected. Barcelona didn't crumble or look like they were down in the dumps. They came out of blocks pretty fast. So obviously the absence of Messi is a big difference, but was there anything tactically or just in terms of general mentality that you noticed was different about this Barcelona to the one that we saw last season?
Well, yes. I mean, let's all take a deep breath and just realize this is just one game and we simply cannot make any conclusions just yet. But, you know, that being said, Barca did look different, I think. They looked more aggressive. They looked more committed as a team. It felt like every single player out there had to do his part. They were more committed than ever. Instead of just having Messi as a sort of as a safety net, you know, behind it. If we fail, we have Messi to bail us out. Now there's no Messi anymore.
Yeah, definitely. As I say, it's interesting, it's fascinating, but Barcelona as a whole, one way or another, will be an entirely different prospect without him. One thing that I noticed was the same as last season, perhaps less, you know, on a less positive note for Barcelona fans, was the fact that they conceded two late goals, and for several minutes it looked like they were in very real danger of throwing that game away, as they did many times last season. What is the problem there? Is it a mentality thing for you, or do you feel like it's something that Koeman needs to work on? Is it down to Ronald to sort that out?
I think, well, it's not that straightforward. It's actually a combination of both things. I think defensively, Barca tonight at least, they looked much sharper. The pressing was on point for the majority of the game. So was the counter-pressing, which was, you know, those things were the things that were dragging Barca down for so long. But the moment they concede a goal, they panic. It's still evident. It's still you can still see that they are not comfortable when the tides are kind of shifting, you know, against them. When the opposition has the momentum, they don't know how to deal with that. And that's definitely a mentality problem. But at the same time, mm-hmm. Koeman still has to figure out the defensive part. He just has to, because Barca still concede too much space between the lines. They're not really compact, and they don't really work well as a unit when defending. So it is a tactical problem to a certain extent, but there is a point where the coach just cannot do that much. You know, it's the players that need to kind of make that shift, forget about the past mistakes, and just move forward. And we'll see how that goes, because we'll have young players in defense, like Araujo and Eric Garcia. Those are young players. Garcia looked great tonight, I have to say that. PK as well. Regardless of that goal, defensively he looked solid. So let's hope this is just a minor blip. But knowing Barca, they just, you cannot have a Barca game without drama. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a trait of theirs that they've taken on in recent times. And just a final one, Martin Brathwaite. He was deemed by many as not good enough. Could you give us an assessment of his 2-goal performance tonight? And tell me, could he be a starter for Barcelona this season?
That's a cheeky one. Well, I think he could be. I think he shouldn't be. Once Fati comes back, I don't think there's place for him in the starting lineup. But he is the very obvious benefactor of having such elite creators in your team. Because when Griezmann and Memphis inevitably drop deep and then start, you know, playmaking, he is the obvious benefactor. He will make the runs. He will be in the box. And at the end of all those passes that are coming streaming into the box, as we've seen, and he will just find the right spot, be there at the right time, and he will just finish the action. So I don't see him as a starter, but he is like the perfect example of what Barca could be, you know, what Barca should have been with Messi, even, because that's all they need to do. That's all they need to do. They need to give Messi a focal point, someone in attack who can make use of Messi's elite, you know, a godly creativity, and that was it. Just give him runners, give him speed, verticality, and he will give you the rest. And I think Brathwaite is kind of the unique profile in Barca's team that should be used, if he doesn't leave, that is. If he stays at Barca, there's definitely a spot for him in the team.
Yeah, definitely. And fitting, or perhaps it's no coincidence, that Henrik Larsson is also on the bench talking to Martin Brathwaite and coaching him. And that could definitely be a factor in that sort of development of him as a super sub. But I do have to throw it back to Sam. I do have to bring it back. Bring it to an end, but I will thank you for your time, DK. And just to the listeners, definitely go and check out Dormagoy on Twitter. He is an excellent analyst, and you can find his stuff at Total Football Analysis, and also on the Johan's Rondos podcast, an excellent bit of audio for you. Thanks very much, DK.
No worries, glad to be here.
So what did you think, Rory, about the game? I mean, you're a fan of Barcelona. What did you think of the first game without Lionel Messi? How do you think Barcelona got on?
It was interesting. It was weird not to see him there. And I think you really did notice it when Real Sociedad got a bit more of a foothold in the game. And they're a very good team at keeping possession. They're very good on the ball. But there was a spell towards the end of the first half, and certainly when they were trying to see out the game in the second half, where Barcelona just didn't really keep the ball, and that was the moment where Leo Messi drops into midfield. You have an extra midfielder, he's got that pausa, stops the game, slows it down a bit, and gives you control. On the other hand, you switch that round with actually having three forwards up against the defence, you get a bit more verticality, and you saw that with the transitions and the counters, and it really benefited Barca in that way. But it was different. I will caveat this entire thing with Villarreal last season. Barcelona destroyed them in the first game, 4-0, and it was all counter-attacks, and everyone was just like, the new Barcelona is here. But yeah, it's one game. Let's see how that goes.
There's still another 37 to go, right?
Yes, far too many if you're a Barcelona fan, frankly, because you know it's going to be filled with more of the same kind of drama that leads to conceding two goals later on.
Yeah, we can't stop the count yet. I know Paz from the La Liga Lowdown squad will be desperate too with Real Madrid top of the league, but we can't do that quite yet. There's plenty of games left to be played.
Plenty of suffering left for Atleti to do as well, to find their way to the top of the table.
Yes, you're spot on there, Rory. Plenty of suffering going on. But there were two teams who really had to suffer on Friday night, playing in the heat. It was Valencia and Getafe. So let's head over to Paco Bollet, where I spoke to him about the game, just after we hear the drama of the first goal of the season, scored from the penalty spot by Carlos Soler.
Justicia, esto es justicia, señores.
Va Carlitos Soler, la pelota en los 11 metros. Mira tres pals, mira el porter. Va Carlos, venga, tienes que marcarla, Carlos. Allá, allá va. Va Carlos Soler al lanzamiento y gol. ¡Y gol!
¡Qué bien!
¡Gol de Carlos! Carlos Soler marca de penal!
So we heard there how Carlos Soler gave Valencia the lead, and that was the only goal in the game, but it wasn't the goal that caught the headlines. I'm joined by Paco Bollet. Paco, how are you?
Hi, Sam. How are you doing? I'm very happy, by the way, after the first 3 points for Valencia, and hoping we can dissect what went down in that opening game in the 21-22 season of La Liga.
Yeah, and it started off very dramatically, didn't it? Hugo Guillamón being sent off after 31 seconds, Eric Cabaco being sent off for Getafe later on. I mean, what is it about Getafe-Valencia that has so much bad blood, so much rivalry between the two teams?
Most of our listeners will remember the high point of this rivalry being in January 2019 with that incredible night at Mestalla when Valencia were able to turn around a 1-0 disadvantage and score three consecutive goals in the last few minutes and turn it around and move on to the next round in Copa del Rey, which ultimately meant that they won it, beating Barca in May 2019. That night, the conflict rose to incredible heights. There was actually a collective fight after the game. You might remember
the Acabi
throwing punches, a brawl with Damian Suarez, Jaime Mata, Arambarri. Everyone was involved. You know, it was a crazy night. And since that point onward, it turned into some sort of bitterness. And we could see that in the intensity, especially in the first half between Valencia and Getafe in this opening game, that there was a bit of bad blood still between both sides.
Yeah, and it wasn't helped by the penalty that Valencia won. I mean, wouldn't be La Liga without some VAR controversy in the first few minutes of the first game of the season. And it was kind of perfect for José Guardalás on his debut, wasn't it? I mean, having that goal that he could then sit back with 10 men and defend a bit more. What did you think of how Guardalás set up the team?
Well, I think that he had a game plan before the match and that it shattered in the 31st second of the competition because of that Hugo Guillamón red card. I think that he was also very, very imprudent, very, very clumsy. But yeah, Bordalás's plan was very different and it had to be changed mid-game or starting the game, and they were able to defend in a very, very interesting way. I believe that the main issue with Getafe wasn't the fact that they didn't score. It was the fact that they really didn't generate any sense of danger. You know, Mamardashvili was a highlight, and we're going to speak about him in a while, but Tigedes, for example, is a very offensive player, and he was very defensive against Getafe. He did a great job running around, pressing the spaces, being able to recover many balls, and I think overall you can see the attitude in Bordalás's men. It has changed quite a lot. It's absolutely different to what we saw from Valencia last season under Javi Gracia, for example. So it wasn't Bordalás' original game plan, but he was able to adapt, and Valencia did great in that sense.
And you mentioned him there, Giorgi Mamardashvili, the new signing who signed for Valencia Mestalla, the B team. And Carlos Soler said after the game that he barely knew him. He's been at the Olympics, came back and met this guy only a few days ago. So can you tell us a bit about him, who he is, and why it was such a surprise to see him as kind of the man of the match for Valencia?
Well, it was a surprise to see him in the starting lineup if you haven't been following closely Valencia's preseason, which has been my case. I've seen all of those seven games played by Bordalás's men. And it was interesting because after the game, I don't know, some fans or some people inside the club were quick to try to, you know, hang on their own necks the medal of bringing Mamardashvili for such a low fee, because it was, I believe, under 1 million euros or whatever. But the truth saying this is that Mamardashvili was offered by his agent to Valencia, as it usually happens every single summer, okay? Valencia didn't scout Mamardashvili. They weren't following this keeper. He suddenly came because his agent came to Valencia and said, I have this keeper, he's 20 years old, he has this sort of talent, and you might be interested in him. And this is Valencia's achievement, and they were absolutely on point. They accepted that offering, and they signed him. He has shown during the preseason that he's talents, attributes are very interesting towards developing his future. He has the size, he has the height, he has the reflexes, and also the personality.
And also the big thing last night, Becker, was the return of fans to Mestalla, but it wasn't sold out. There were 15,000 tickets on sale, and only around 10,000, I think, was the figure that was given fans actually at the stadium. So why are fans not going to Mestalla to see Valencia after a year and a half away?
Well, there are a number of reasons. Obviously, the first one, the most important one, is that there's a fallout between Valencia's board, the management, Meriton Holdings, Peter Lim, Anil Murti, and the fan base, most of the fan base in this case. That fallout is, I believe, that breach is not going to be, undone, at least in the next few months. Because Valencia's fan base wants Peter Lim out, and that's the truth, and a single win isn't going to change that. But if you add the fact that yesterday was incredibly hot in Valencia, this weekend has been incredible around the whole Spanish region, but in Valencia, obviously, you have to add the humidity, and it makes the fact of going to any game or any sort of spectacle outside.
With the
outdoors,
face mask on in 42 degrees.
It's absolutely nuts to go outside. And actually, many fans said that. It was very difficult to cheer for the team or boo the management of the club when you are with your mask and extremely sweaty, which was the case in Valencia's game. And also the fact that Valencia haven't put on sale the season tickets for the whole season. Actually, my season pass, which I extended a few weeks ago, only includes the second half of the season. When Valencia expect all the health regulations to be set in place and everyone to be able to attend the stadium. But for the first half of the competition, the first leg, you have to actually go and buy your ticket. And the prices aren't cheap for overall the whole public, but also for Valencia fans and socios and people who already have their season pass. So if you add all of those things, obviously it wasn't the best day to go to Mestalla or the best conditions. And that's why instead of 15,000, which was the limit capacity, you only saw 2/3 of the attendance.
Great. Thanks, Paco. And hopefully we'll be back in touch with you again soon to see if Bordalás can revive Valencia, get fans back and get everyone on the same page at the club again.
Cheers, Sam. Bye-bye.
Stay tuned, because we'll be back after this short break to take a look at Celta Vigo versus Atletico Madrid, another heated game with another couple of red cards. And we'll also talk about the rest of the La Liga action and also take a look at a brand new feature on the podcast for this season. Keep listening.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown, where we're going to take a look at the rest of the La Liga action this weekend. So as we've already heard, there was a win for Valencia, a win for Barcelona, but there weren't too many other victories, plenty of ties ending in draws. One side who did pick up a convincing win was Sevilla, a 3-0 win over newly promoted Rayo Vallecano, had Luka Zidane, Zinedine's son, sent off very early on in that game. Then there are also better luck for some of the other newly promoted teams. Real Mallorca picking up a draw at home against Real Betis and Espanyol drawing at El Sadar against Osasuna. Cadiz and Levante also played out the other draw of the weekend as there was a last gasp equaliser for Cadiz. Really dramatic circumstances there. But we're going to take a look at one of the ties which looks like it could have big implications for the title and the race for Europe at the end of the season. So here I'm going to hand over to Rory, who spoke to Ian Morris of Celta USA as Celta Vigo welcomed Atletico Madrid as they started their title defence at Balaidos.
Saúl la va a poner al costado derecho, aparece Correa, gol del Atlético de Madrid.
¡Vamos, correita!
¡Gol del mejor del partido! El pase de Saúl, perfecto, cruzado, diagonal. Y llega Correa y dice, ¿dónde lo quieres? Se lo cruza al otro palo, perfecto en la ejecución. Primero, zambombazo, ahora ajustado al palo. Marca Correa, marca el ángel del Atlético de Madrid. Celta 1, Atleti, Correa, Correa 2.
You join me here with Ian Morris, aka Celta USA, on Twitter. We've just watched Celta against Atleti. It finished 2-1 Atleti after 100 minutes of football, a few red cards, plenty of controversy, and I think the word is pulsating for the drama that we've just seen. A bitter end to the game for Celta, but Ian, did you see enough to be positive going forward into the rest of the season from Chacho Codet's men?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, thank you for having me on. It's always fun to come on and chat with you guys. Back to the game. The first half wasn't the greatest half from Celta. There were some communication issues in the back half. Things looked a little disjointed. And of course, Ángel Correa puts Atleti up 1-0. But after the half, I think we saw a lot better version of Celta. That may have had something to do with Eduardo Cudet being able to talk to them, as he's suspended for the first two games of the season. But it looked like Celta really got more organized in general terms. The addition of Franco Servi and Augusto Solari on the pitch really seemed to add a lot of verticality that Atleti had some trouble dealing with. The Aspas penalty gave us life. Unfortunately, right after that, the one big defensive mistake that Celta made in the second half gives Correa his second goal of the day, and Celta just couldn't convert the chances it had after that to draw the game, which might have been the fairest result. But you know, it's one of those games that can just go either way depending on the day, and today wasn't Celta's day.
Definitely, it was pretty agonizing for Celta, especially at the end. Jimenez cleared one right off the line, and it really looked like Celta would get something out of it. For Celta, you said about that sort of one mistake, and they did have a very good second half. The defence has long since been an issue for Celta, and at times it does look like they're stretched a wee bit thin across the park, at least from my point of view. Is this something that Chacho Caudet is going to look to sort out this season, or is it just a part of an assumed risk of playing in that way, pressing so high, you'll get more rewards than you will sort of, you'll be penalised by it?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both. There were times last season when Celta was a lot better at staying organized in the back half. A lot of that had to do with Nestor Araujo and Jason Murillo playing together, two very experienced players who felt comfortable working together. And obviously Renato Tapia adds a lot of structure. But today, I think a lot of the mistakes we saw were the result of Jose Fontan's lack of experience. And against a team against like Atleti, they're going to make you pay for those mistakes. I still think Fontan has a great future ahead of him. I think he's going to be an important part of this team, but it was a tough draw for him today. So one of the things that I think Celta and Caudet will need to do in order to improve that back half is add another experienced defender who can maybe add a little bit of stability in the back half and a little bit more hierarchy in a sense, because you know, Nestor Araujo isn't the most type A defender, and Jose Fontan being as young as he is, there wasn't a lot of leadership on the back line today. So that's something that could definitely be worked on and hopefully does get fixed with a signing before the end of the summer.
Yeah, certainly it's a bit of a breath of fire coming into Atleti, first game of the season for a young defender. Sort of ahead of him was Denis Suarez today, who did play despite the sort of issues that have been going on over the summer. There was a spat with the president about a youth player leaving for Madrid who shares the same agent as Denis Suarez and Iago Aspas. And Carlos Mourinho has said, the Celta president has said, that Denis Suarez' future might be under threat at Celta if he doesn't back down from this. Firstly, how likely is he to leave before the end of the transfer window? And if so, or just generally, is this going to destabilize Celta?
I don't think there's any chance he leaves this summer. I think Eduardo Caudet might have a bit of an issue with that because there's no clear replacement for him in this squad. So I don't see him leaving this summer. Caudet said in his pregame press conference yesterday that he thinks this is something that will be resolved, that by the end of the year, Mourinho and Suarez will have come to some sort of agreement, come to some sort of consensus as to where each side needs to be in this. You know, I saw Suarez today look like Denis Suarez always looks. He didn't look to be distracted. Caudet certainly had no reservations about putting him into the starting lineup, and the team doesn't seem distracted at all by it. You know, maybe I think everyone is sort of with this hope that things will get resolved and not much will come of it. Mourinho is known for having a bit of a temper and speaking his mind, sometimes to his own detriment. And while I do understand his unhappiness with Suarez and the whole situation, I think both parties know that he's too important to just dispose of. So I think it's not going to be a huge issue. Hopefully it gets resolved by the end of the year, but in the short term, I don't see it being much of a distraction.
Yeah, certainly. It wouldn't be the first time that a Spanish club president has engaged in some posturing with players or other organizations, shall we say. Thank you ever so much for your time, Ian. It's always a pleasure to have you on, and brilliant to get your views on Celta, as they're always very insightful.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here. Hope we talk again soon.
Thanks, Rory, and thanks, Ian, as well, for coming on to talk about Celta. But this was also Atleti's big win. There were always going to be a lot of pressure on them to get off to a winning start, and I think they did that. I mean, Rory, how impressed were you by Atletico?
I think I tweeted it out roughly just after the game. The staying power of Atleti is so impressive, because that's a game that most people do not walk out of with 3 points. And if it wasn't Atleti, I would have said that was completely fortune. It was down to that. But you've seen it 100 times with them. They get away with it. They clear it off the line. They find a way just to eke out the results. And Luis Suarez was on at the end and milking the clock in classic fashion, which did eventually lead to Hermoso getting sent off. I don't think that was part of his plan. but it was Atleti at their best, suffering and winning.
Exactly, it was very Diego Simeone, and also something that I loved about that Atleti display was two of the best performers were Saul Niguez and Jeffrey Condogbia. I mean, these are two guys that some people were surprised to see in the starting lineup. Mm. And two guys who last season maybe never reached their best, but I think they started superbly. I mean, Saul, in the second goal, the winning goal that Angel Correa scored, you saw him kind of carry the ball from the halfway line almost. He was instrumental. And as Angel Correa scored, you saw him kind of fall to his knees and pumping his fists. I mean, it was really incredible to see kind of that passion from a player who's been linked with an exit all summer. And he really produced the goods for Atletico, and that's kind of what Diego Simeone does, is getting the best out of his players like Condogbia, like Saul, who probably know that over the course of a season they're not going to be first choice, but given this opportunity, they've gone out there and grabbed it with both hands.
Completely. I mean,
they play superbly for Atletico, and Celta didn't let them rest either, but Atletico kind of hung in there, like you say. It was definitely kind of suffering, and que manera de sufrir, as the Atleti fans say. But they survived it.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So now let's talk a bit about the other games in La Liga, shall we?
Definitely. Let's move on to Los Blancos.
Los Blancos, Real Madrid, who got off to a fine start of their own with Carlo Ancelotti back for his first game in charge of a second stint. And it was a victorious one. Despite a difficult first half, Real Madrid kind of came out of the blocks a totally different speed after half-time. Rory, what did you think of that game?
It was a different Real Madrid performance, and I was quite impressed. Their first half wasn't amazing, but I actually think that Alaves deserves some credit for the game that they gave them. And I think it was Real Madrid played with a grit that you're not used to seeing them with, and I certainly didn't expect to see them with under Don Carlo, because he is a manager who bases his career on liberating the great creators of the game and giving them a bit of freedom to work with. But you saw Bale, you saw Hazard and Benzema all playing a role. And for me, it's opportunistic to highlight him because he scored. But Nacho was the story of this game, because his sort of endeavour and Real Madrid's solidity at the back, I think, is what will carry them home this season if they can get a few more goals. And he in the post-match interview, actually, he marked out or highlighted Alaba's attitude and said he has a mentality that you can really appreciate as a defender. And a bit of bite is perhaps what Real Madrid needed this season, because last year it just seemed a little bit tired at times. And I think that's ultimately where they ended up failing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think with Carlo Ancelotti, before kickoff, everyone saw the lineup and said, oh, this is going to be very Carlo Ancelotti. He's going with the experienced players, his favourites, that kind of thing. But then when they started playing, you kind of realised that wasn't the case. I mean, like you say, Hazard and Bale really had to track back and do a bit of defensive work. Alaba was pushed out to left back, which I think everyone knows is not his favourite position. And it was kind of a team effort from Real Madrid, and maybe that's something that we haven't seen too much of in recent years. We've seen lots of individual quality and standout performances, but kind of over the last few months with Zinedine Zidane, they were relying more on the guys like Militao and Nacho to step up, and they did that again against Alaves, but not without taking their luck as well. I mean, Lucas Vazquez could have conceded a penalty for handball. What do you think?
Well, and I'm sure we'll come on to this, By the letter of the law, it's interpretive, but if you're going to give the penalty that got given against Atleti for Marcos Llorente's handball, then Lucas Vazquez's handball has to be a penalty. And I don't think anybody actually cares what the handball rule is. They just want consistency, because there's just no way you can get through a season without everyone up in arms, especially when you have VAR and you have the opportunity to look at these things again. That's what irritates people so much. Irritates players, managers, fans, everyone. And just a little bit of consistency is all we ask.
Yeah, although I'm going to stick up for the referee here a little bit as well, because I think that in this case with Lucas Vazquez, he didn't necessarily get it wrong. I mean, the letter of the law is that if it deflects off of your body onto your arm and it's in a kind of natural position, then it's not a penalty. So I think you can see why it wasn't a penalty. and maybe the VAR referees decided, no, you don't need to look at it. But then that just makes the Marcos Llorente one look even worse, with Martinez Munuera, who went and looked at the penalty on the VAR, and then he decided to yellow card Llorente, which means it just doesn't fit in with the rules. I mean, the rules say if it's a handball, then it's either one that's deflected off his body onto his arm and it's not a penalty, or it's a deliberate handball where he's trying to stop it, and in that case, it's a red card. So what he was thinking there is beyond belief. Nobody knows. A brand new feature on our podcast for this season is the MVP, the most valued player of the week. You might have noticed before that we run the Twitter thread every Monday, getting your votes for the best performance of the weekend. And we're including it now in the podcast as well. So me and Rory are going to discuss our four nominees for this week. And I think the first name on the sheet for me has to be Giorgio Mamardashvili, the Valencia goalkeeper who came out of nowhere and surprised everyone on Friday night.
Yeah, definitely. And well handled with his name there. You skated over that one.
I had a
well.
Few practice tries and Paco kind of guided me on the right lines. Yeah,
I think he was phenomenal. He, for your first appearance in La Liga, absolutely sensational and saved Valencia the game. I thought Valencia were good, but it needed a bit of help from Mamardashvili just to make it through at the end there, and a couple miracle saves, and that's the sort of thing that wins you points.
Yeah, kind of as Paco said as well, it was a big performance and kind of shows what kind of future he's got ahead of him. So I think he's one that we definitely have to include in there. Another one from the Barcelona game, I mean, who would you pick out? I mean, for me, there's one man who stands out in the absence of Lionel Messi, needing a goal scorer, needing a hero at Camp Nou.
Could it be anyone else but Martin Braithwaite, the hero of the hour? And Braithwaite, as we said, he gets a lot of criticism, but he was really, really good in the Euros, and he completely took that form into this game. He was direct, he was running in behind, defensively he was excellent. And I think sometimes we maybe overestimate the amount of talent you need to be really effective, but that's exactly what Braithwaite was. Two goals and an assist. He was excellent today.
Yeah, and then I think we have to look at the other big two teams as well. I mean, they were the sides that had kind of the biggest wins over the course of the weekend. I mean, from Real Madrid, I mean, I was really impressed by David Alaba's performance on his debut, kind of coming out of the blocks, and it was almost kind of a captain's performance from him, even at left back. Kind of like you said before, with Nacho talking about his attitude and kind of his whole kind of work rate, his kind of professionalism, kind of really made the rest of the team around him work. But I mean, who would you pick out from that Real Madrid team?
David Alaba was good, but he wasn't Benzema. Benzema is the star of La Liga this season, and as much as it pains me to admit that with some of my leanings, Benzema's by far and away one of the best player in the league at the minute for me. He's so effective, he's so intelligent, and to go with that, he has the endeavour. That second goal, it was all about endeavour, getting there before the defender. And while we're on the topic, Hazard's flick, I think he was actually going through the goal, but it turned into a beautiful volley for Benzema.
Yeah, Marcus headline I saw this on Sunday morning as well was the sweep routine of Benzema, and that's kind of everything that it kind of summed up that performance, wasn't it? That there was nothing else to expect from Karim Benzema but kind of the leader's goal-scoring performance.
Yeah.
And then with Atletico as well, I mean, who can you think of from Atletico that kind of really deserved it? I mean, there were a couple of big performances. Was there anyone who stood out to you in particular?
You mentioned Saul, and I did think he was really, really good, given that he was playing out of position and transfer situation. That you mentioned, it can be easy to be that focused, but the commitment that he showed and then to play such a huge role in the goal was massive, and eventually turned out to be the winner for Atleti. And
was the winner that came from Angel Correa. If we're going to pick one Atleti player, it has to be Angel Correa. I mean, I was just talking to some Atleti mates earlier, and we were discussing kind of how it was only a year or so ago that we were there discussing Angel Correa, saying, yeah, get rid of Angel Correa, bring in Rodrigo Moreno. Rodrigo Moreno Ooh. Now being hauled off at half-time for Leeds. Well, Angel Correa, I mean, towards the end of last season, he was really good. But I think, again, against Celta, he's kind of shown this added kind of cutting edge that he has to his game. And I think kind of the finishing for both goals was spectacular. Very different goals. The first one kind of a rocket from the edge of the box. The second one much more composed. I think Atletico, especially in these first few weeks of the season, with Luis Suarez not having had a pre-season, João Felix having been injured, I think Atletico needs someone to step up in attack until they can at least bring a striker in. And if Ángel Correa plays like this for the next couple of weeks, then Atletico, maybe they save themselves 40 million in the transfer market.
Yeah, and I think Correa is like an interesting case because he's always been good. He's just been very inconsistent. And even last season, he missed an absolute sitter against Levante and everyone was up in arms about him. But we do maybe need to cut people a bit of rope or cut players a bit of rope because Correa came in very, very young and he has to develop. He has to get and mature to being like the best version of him that he can be. And Simeone's helping him with that. But yeah, I think that you need to normalise that sort of idea of someone getting better and becoming more consistent because not everyone is Leo Messi. They're not just going to come in and be 19 years old and sensational all the time.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, he's still only 26, which kind of blows your mind a little bit with how long he's been around, but he also scored that big goal at Valladolid to get Atleti back into the game to win the title on the final day of last season. So I think he's in good form for Atletico as well. But another man who could be considered maybe is Eric Lamela. I mean, what a debut for him and for Sevilla, scoring two goals after coming in the summer in that swap deal for Brian Hill. I think, though, maybe he doesn't make the cut here. I mean, the first goal was a fortunate deflection. And Rayo Vallecano down to 10 men. I mean, two late goals for Lamela as well. And just playing the 10 men in 35-degree heat at midnight on a Sunday night. It's no surprise that Rayo were looking a little bit tired in their first game back in the top flight. I think that kind of gives us our four candidates then, right? I mean, we have Georgios Mamardashvili. We have Martin Brathwaite. We have, not David Alaba, that was my idea, but you ruled me out, you said Karim Benzema, and we have Ángel Correa from Atleti. So that's our four candidates. Make sure you check out our Twitter, at La Liga Lowdown on Monday, and get your votes in. You can also hear why we're backing each of those candidates. But there's more than just the MVP to look out for on Monday. There's two more games as La Liga rolls to a close for match day one. Villarreal welcome Granada in the early kickoff. Robert Moreno, they're making his debut as Granada coach, having replaced Diego Martinez. And then it's the club that stayed up on the final day of last season, Elche, and they're welcoming Marcelino's Athletic Club in the late kickoff. But stay tuned for all of that because there will be plenty more to come throughout the season. Rory, thank you very much for joining us. We've discussed a lot from the teams in the title race. What was your kind of pick from the weekend? What was your best moment from the weekend?
My best moment has to be Gerard Piqué heading home from the free kick of Memphis Depay, who he helped register by cutting his wage. I think you don't get any more or any better example of a man sacrificing for his club, which is all too rare these days.
That's a good one, but my one, it has to be from the Pizjuan. I think this weekend was all about the fans returning to the stadiums, not in the same numbers as we've seen in the Premier League or the Bundesliga, but fans were back at every La Liga game this weekend. And there was no better kind of demonstration of the emotions of that than at the Pizjuan, where we heard the club anthem sung with fans in tears. So let's listen into that as we end the podcast. Rory, thank you for joining us.
A pleasure.
And we'll speak to you soon. Tune in next week for a recap of match day two with some cracking fixtures in there as well. But first, let's say goodbye with the Sevilla fans and their deafening anthem. Aquí estamos contigo, Sevilla, compartiendo la gloria en el mundo, orgullo del fútbol de nuestra ciudad.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.